Welcome to Conversations on Healthcare with Mark Maselli and Margaret Flinter. Mark is the founder, president, and CEO of Community Health Center Incorporated, a provider of primary healthcare services for the uninsured and underserved in 13 cities and 218 service locations in Connecticut. Margaret is senior vice president and clinical director of CHC and is a family nurse practitioner by profession. Conversations on Healthcare is a weekly look at the people and ideas that are transforming the delivery of healthcare in America. And this week, Mark and Margaret will be speaking with Carolyn Miles, president and CEO of Save the Children. In the Tech Report segment, Marianne O'Hare reports on needleless injection technology being developed at MIT. And we begin with this week's bright idea.
Each week, Conversations highlights a bright idea about how to make wellness a part of our communities and everyday lives. The obesity epidemic is taking its toll on the youth population. A third of America's children are obese or overweight, and the number are much higher in African American communities. Another startling statistic, 1 in 10 African American teens has high blood pressure, a solid indicator for future cardiovascular disease. A study at the Medical College of Georgia has uncovered what could be a simple yet powerful weapon, meditation. A recent study published in the journal Evidence-Based Complementary and Alternative Medicine looked at a group of teens with high blood pressure. Half were given instructions on how to lower their blood pressure. The other half were also instructed in transcendental meditation, which they practiced both with a group and at home each day for about 4 months. Electrocardiograms taken before and after the four-month period showed those who meditated twice a day for 15 minutes had far lower left ventricle mass than those who did not. Increased mass of the left ventricle is caused by the extra workload exerted on the heart muscle from high blood pressure. Another benefit, school records also showed better behavioral outcomes among the meditating group. A simple, self-directed practice that could reduce the deleterious effects of high blood pressure in an at-risk youth population, impacting not only their health, but well-being as well. Now that's a bright idea. We're speaking today with Carolyn Miles, president and CEO of Save the Children, the world's largest independent nonprofit organization that has been serving the needs of children globally for more than 90 years. Save the Children has 30 member organizations around the world and programs in 120 countries that are impacting the health and well-being of 85 million children per year, including here in the United States. Carolyn, welcome to Conversations on Healthcare.
Thank you, Mark and Margaret. Great to be here.
You know, your organization recently published a pioneering report on global childhood mortality, a decade of change for newborn survival, which was published in the medical journal Health Policy and Planning. The first of its kind report involved 3 years of work with 60 main authors and 90 contributors from around the world, offering really a comprehensive meta-analysis of the persistent problems of newborn mortality. And while the report notes some real progress in the past two decades, there was some real disparity in survival rates among newborns. Tell us about your report's details and any troubling trends they revealed.
Well, thanks, Mark. And I think this report really does highlight the issue of newborns and how that fits into the overall issue of child mortality. And the statistics are actually pretty shocking. 3.1 million babies die in the first month of life each year. So that's around the world, and most of those deaths obviously occur in the developing world. And in many countries, the death of newborns, so that first month, is more than 40% of the kids that are dying under the age of five. So we've really got to do something about that newborn period. And one thing our report found that was, despite these figures and despite the big piece that newborns make up in terms of preventable child deaths, only about 6% of the world's official development assistance, the development assistance programs, actually mentions the word newborns, and only about 0.1% of these programs actually exclusively target newborns. So we think it's really important to get this issue out on the table so that we can change those numbers and actually change the dynamics and save more babies.
Carolyn, you took the report and the results of it and presented it to a world gathering in Washington recently, the Child Survival Call to Action, which was a gathering of officials from USAID. I understand Secretary of State Hillary Clinton was there, government leaders from 80 countries, NGOs, public players, private players in the global health arena. all coming together to work on the same goal, eliminating those preventable causes of infant and child death around the world. And I know you've had longstanding partnerships with many of these groups. Maybe you could share with us what's unique about how Save the Children and these other organizations are recalibrating their efforts to meet the global challenge. Are we looking at a paradigm shift in how we're going to address child mortality worldwide?
Well, I think there is a moment in time here, and I did attend this gathering, and the Secretary of State really very eloquently, I think, called on all of us to do everything we possibly could to save the lives of children. And I think there's a moment in time here where we have made a tremendous amount of progress on child survival, but there are still key countries and key areas like newborn mortality and care where we really have to come together to do this. So I think it's a real chance to build on the success that we've had in the last decades. And between 1990 and today, we really have driven down the number of kids dying of preventable deaths. We know what works in terms of saving kids' lives. And now we're really putting together an actual, what we're calling a roadmap. The United States and the U.S. government in particular is the largest funder of these kinds of programs globally. And I think it's important for the U.S. to continue a leadership position, but we all have to do our part and we have to get others to join as well. And that initiative, that event really highlighted India and Ethiopia, for example, as examples of countries where kids are dying in those countries of preventable deaths, and there is something that can really be done. I think it also highlighted the role that the public can play by really getting people to put support behind this issue, and whether that's talking to their elected officials to say we care about kids dying in other countries, or whether that's giving to organizations like ours and others. Those are all things that really make a difference, and Save the Children actually has a petition that we're asking world leaders to commit to ending preventable deaths, and listeners can go to our website at savethechildren.org and actually sign that petition. So it's a way for the public to actually get involved as well.
And in addition, Save the Children not only motivates the public to act on their heart, but you're also an intervention strategy based on the head of a sort of a plain evidence-based practices in the field to tackle a variety of issues affecting children around the globe, including health and nutrition. In your report, you highlighted the serious scope of the newborn mortality, but you also outlined data on some of the programs that, with a relatively small investment, could have a huge impact on newborn survival, like the Kangaroo Mother Care Program and Alive and Thrive. Tell us about some of these programs you've initiated in recent years that have yielded success and hopefully are being applied more broadly.
Yeah, there's some great examples, and I've been out actually to see these programs in the field. So Kangaroo Mother Care is a great example of that, and really all it means is, and it's especially effective with premature babies, and that's a cause of premature complications or a cause of newborn deaths, a large cause of newborn deaths. So what the mom does is actually wraps the baby, and oftentimes these babies are very small, but they wrap the baby, they put the baby on their stomach, and they wrap the baby in a cloth so that the baby is, first of all, kept warm. So they use the mother as really an incubator for the baby. And then it's very convenient for the moms to breastfeed. And access to breastfeeding and exclusive breastfeeding in those first 6 months is really, really critical. So this is a very simple thing. It really takes communication with moms and training moms how to do it, but there's no fancy equipment that's needed to do this. You need a mom and a cloth and a baby. Mm-hmm. And so it really works. And I saw this in Malawi up front and in live with moms actually doing it, and it really works tremendously well. Alive and Thrive is another example, and in places like Vietnam, Ethiopia, Bangladesh, we're working on child nutrition in that first 1,000 days. So that's from the time that a mom conceives till the end of the second year of the baby's life. And that's a really key critical issue for kids. And if you can make sure that malnutrition is not happening for kids that age, it really makes a huge difference. Malnutrition can permanently stunt children and leave them far more likely to die of preventable disease. So that's another example, and again, have seen that happening in a lot of countries like Vietnam.
Well, Carolyn, those are both great examples of meaningful systemic change on the ground. And I know that's a big part of the work that you do in the 120 countries that you serve. And we know that you can't sustain change unless that change has come from within. With so many sites around the world, as you try to empower communities to learn the steps that they need to take to improve health outcomes for themselves, I know there's been a significant push around community health workers and empowering community health workers. Tell us about that training and how are these programs making a difference in health outcomes in the communities you serve?
Well, I'll tell you that the frontline health workers are really the heroes here. They are the people who actually save lives every single day. And so in many of the countries where we work, they are on the ground. A lot of times it's women, but also men, who live in the communities. And they really focus on getting basic proven health care to families that need it. Because kids are dying in these communities, right? They're a lot of times not even within reach of a facility, but even if they are, they really need the community health care. So those health workers really help make sure that kids are served in the places where they're sick. There aren't enough doctors, there aren't enough nurses, clinics, or hospitals really to save these children. So one of the things that Save the Children spends a lot of our time on is training these community health workers and making sure they understand how do they recognize, first of all, starting with pregnancy, how do they recognize the signs of a difficult pregnancy? How do they work with moms to have a plan to deliver? How are they going to deliver? Who's going to be there? We do a lot of work with midwives in these kinds of communities, traditional birth attendants, making sure that somebody's there at birth that can really help moms. And then for the first really critical time period after birth, that first month, making sure that moms have the care that they need and that these health workers can recognize when a baby is sick, make sure they know what to do. So there's a lot of very simple things, administering antibiotics for pneumonia, for example, which kills many, many children. So really focusing on what a kids need in that early period, what a moms need, and then continuing to follow up and focused on kids under the age of 5.
We're speaking today with Carolyn Miles, President and CEO of Save the Children, the world's leading independent organization for childhood health and welfare. Save the Children just released a groundbreaking report on childhood mortality called A Decade of Change for Newborn Survival, which details a drop in overall preventable child deaths worldwide, but details the statistically high number of deaths of newborns. Carolyn, a key component of the success of the work you do comes through impacting health policy in the countries you serve. And you've had some successes that have paved the way for improving newborn and childhood health conditions around the world. And you just said that frontline workers are the real heroes. But it's pretty clear that one of the themes that drives through success in countries is strong leadership and partnership. We're critical to developing national strategies. Talk to us a little bit about some examples of countries where that is in play.
Well, I think that's very true. At the end of the day, we really need national governments to take this issue up. They need to decide that their children are not going to die of preventable things. They need to make that commitment. And in the countries where we have seen real progress on child survival and on newborns, very, very poor countries, a critical factor is leadership at the government level. So that might be in Uganda, for example, we've really worked closely with the Minister of Health, and they've made sure that health funding would get to training midwives, for example, so that moms actually have skilled attendants at birth. In Nepal, again, community health workers, getting them to actually be able to administer antibiotics. So in a place where there are few doctors, but there's still kind of this sense that only a doctor could do these kinds of things, we worked a lot with the Nepalese government to say, you know, really when it comes to administering an antibiotic or treating an infection of the umbilical cord, these are things that can kill babies. We really can train community health workers to do this. And so now we're working with the government to integrate those community health workers into the government system to make sure they can administer antibiotics, to make sure they can treat infections of the umbilical cord, for example. And in Ethiopia, another really powerful example, there pneumonia is the leading cause of child death. Now, you know, we all think of pneumonia here in the developed world. It would rarely kill a child, but in Ethiopia, it's a huge killer of kids. And now literally tens of thousands of community health workers who are known there as health extension workers can actually deliver these life-saving antibiotics. So that's something you really have to work with the government to do. So you do have some real champions inside these national governments to do this.
Carolyn, your organization really is a perfect partner to assist USAID and others in setting up a global network to facilitate these public health initiatives. And I understand you're part of their TASC3 team, the Technical Assistance and Support Contract, which is designed to provide technical support in many areas of maternal, newborn, and child health. And you're advising countries on ways to build that institutional capacity, the infrastructure, the policies, the financing, some of the research, and the quality control. And it strikes me as you talk about the examples we just looked at, focusing on the community health workers, that is just such a huge and critical piece, but it's part of a continuum, right? You have to have infrastructure all the way along the line so that you can prevent what you can, but you also have the ability to treat at the primary level, but also further up the line. And all of that requires infrastructure. Tell us about some of those infrastructure changes that Save the Children has helped to facilitate in these countries.
Well, that's right, Margaret. A lot of this is about families that are kind of at the end of the healthcare system. And it's about getting the healthcare system to them, but it's also making sure that the rest of the healthcare system can serve them. So a lot of our work does focus on this idea of the continuum of healthcare from the household and then leading into the hospital. And even when infrastructure's in place, you know, oftentimes it's the links between the elements of the healthcare system. So it's the link between the community health worker and the clinic that might be located relatively close by, and the link between the clinic and the primary hospital. So making sure that we really look at those kinds of things and really fill in those gaps. You know, sometimes it's pretty simple things, convincing, you know, health workers on the way they should talk to patients. You know, a great example is I talked before about women making a plan for delivery. So if they have a facility nearby, we obviously want them to deliver in a facility, but they sometimes don't have the money even to be able to take a taxi to get to the facility in more peri-urban areas. So creating a savings fund that women can borrow from to use for the taxi to the hospital. Things like that really make a big difference. And it really is about looking at the healthcare system and saying, how can the healthcare system work for these poor families? Because that's where kids are dying. They're dying in poor, underserved communities and families. And how do we make a healthcare system work for them?
Carolyn, while the vast majority of the work of Save the Children is done overseas, your program serves hundreds of thousands of American children as well, many of whom continue to live in poverty. And Save the Children started its work here in the United States about 80 years ago to assist impoverished children living in Appalachia during the Depression, focusing on improving their nutrition. And that program was the precursor to our National School Lunch Program, which provides millions of children access to nutritious meals. So a couple of questions. One, on childhood fitness and obesity. Tell us a little bit about your work there, but also talk to us about the poor ranking infant mortality rate has in America. And we're not happy with where it is. And what are you doing to improve that number?
Sure. Well, I'll start with your second question first. In our recent State of the World's Mothers report, we actually look at things like infant mortality and maternal mortality around the world. And the U.S. ranks 25 in terms of developed countries. So if you ask most people on the street, where would we rank on such a thing in terms of where is it a great place to be a mom? Mm-hmm. I think they'd probably think it was much higher.
Absolutely.
And we did actually move up in the U.S. from 31 to 25 this year. So some of that was driven by better prenatal care. But it is a real issue still in the United States if you compare it to developed countries. And on the obesity issue, we are doing a lot of work in the United States. Again, we work with poor families, and it's primarily in rural, although we're moving into some urban centers now in the U.S. as well, but mostly working in rural communities. And there, you know, the access to healthy foods, the access to physical activity, things for kids to do in terms of sports teams and things like that, you know, it's much different than in suburban communities or even in urban communities. And so you see a huge obesity rate among poor rural kids. And so we're working hard to make sure that kids, particularly linked with working with schools, have healthy food and they have physical activity to do as well. So it's a big problem in the U.S.
And Carolyn, I'd like to take a moment to look at an area where Save the Children is often the most visible, and that is after a disaster strikes, and could be a natural disaster like a tsunami in Southeast Asia or the earthquake in Haiti. Chances are you already have boots on the ground when a natural disaster like that occurs, but you're also in the thick of war zones where children, of course, are in perpetual danger when there is a war going going on. Tell us about the scope of that work and how you've been able to use newer technologies to support your response during emergencies, and also maybe how do you find the human resources when suddenly there's a drastic uptick in the level of need in an area to get in there and make a meaningful difference?
Sure. Well, and certainly on the technology side, we actually are pioneering some new ways to work. Actually, right now we're doing a large response to a big food crisis in Africa, including Kenya, Ethiopia, and Somalia. And we're actually live streaming some of our work out onto the internet and turning that into YouTube videos and doing all sorts of things with it, but bringing people much closer to the people who are suffering in those emergencies. And I think that's a way to really, the whole issue is people seeing really what's happening and feeling like they actually can help. And Save the Children does an awful lot of work in emergency situations.
Carolyn, we like to ask all of our guests this final question. When you look around the country and the world, what do you see in terms of innovation that our listeners at Conversations should be keeping an eye on?
Well, you know, we're doing a lot with mobile technology now, and actually part of this session with Hillary Clinton did focus on something called mHealth, which is how do you really use mobile technology to get information out into isolated communities. So that could be things like working with community health workers and sending out reminder messages out to them using cell phones, for example, or sending out videos that they can actually access on mobile phones, how we get data back from communities in order to really understand what's happening in terms of child survival or in terms of an epidemic, how do we use connections with cell phones to do that, and how do we even connect it to doctors that might be at a hospital far away from that community, all using mobile phones. And, you know, it's amazing when you go out to these communities, you are out way, way out in these rural areas, but everybody has a cell phone.
Mm-hmm. We've been speaking today with Carolyn Miles, President and CEO of Save the Children, the world's largest independent nonprofit organization seeking to improve the health and lives of children around the world. Carolyn, thank you so much for joining us today on Conversations.
Thank you, Margaret, and thank you, Mark, as well.
I'm Marianne O'Hare with this tech report. Scientists at MIT have created a new weapon that could transform the experience of rolling up your sleeve and looking away with a cringe as some medical professional pokes you with a syringe. Scientists Catherine Hogan and Ian Hunter's team at MIT have developed the world's first needleless injection device that delivers medicine through the skin at the speed of sound. It's a brand new system for drug delivery, which could greatly reduce not only the unpleasant experience of the needle prick, but eliminate a big problem in health care. Accidental skin pricks with used syringe needles that occurs almost 400,000 times a year. Dr. Kathy Hogan says the technology uses magnets and coils that, when activated with an electrical current, creates a Lorentz force strong enough to deliver a super thin stream of liquid through the skin at the speed of sound.
We can successfully deliver a wide variety of volumes of drug at a wide variety of velocities with a very low degree of error, something a needle can't do.
Dr. Ian Hunter says the medicine stream pierces the skin almost imperceptibly, much like a mosquito.
So the drug comes out at this fine jet, about the same diameter as a mosquito proboscis. You don't feel when the mosquito inserts its proboscis into your skin because it's so very narrow. Our jet is of a similar diameter.
This new technology will also make it easier to administer drugs in previously harder to reach places.
We've also developed this device so it can be used for delivery of drugs right through the eye into the retina. We've succeeded in delivering drugs through the tympanic membrane in your ear so that we can deliver drugs to the middle and inner ear.
This alternative to the hypodermic needle injection also holds another promise besides safety and more comfort. Folks who must regularly inject themselves, say for daily insulin, might become more compliant with medicine taking, yielding better health outcomes. I'm Marianne O'Hare with this tech report.
If you have questions for Mark Maselli and Margaret Flinter or would like to subscribe to the podcast, you can visit them on the web at chc1.com. The Health Forum is part of Connecting Our Communities from Connecticut Public Broadcasting in partnership with area nonprofits, and production support for Conversations on Healthcare has been provided in part by Community Health Center Incorporated. You're listening to WNPR, Connecticut's public radio station.